As we welcome Dr. Rose Phillips to the line. Welcome, Dr. Phillips. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much. Hello to the listeners as well.
Just before we start, we're not comparing apples with apples if we say don't work hard, work smart, are we?
No, working hard and working smart are not apples. They are apples and oranges.
Yeah, that's what I'm... Because people are thinking smart work is the equivalent of hard work.
No, they're definitely not the same thing. I think it's because people think that hard work is about the hours, but hard work is actually about the energy, the effort, the presence, the contribution. And whether you work hard or whether you work smart, you still have to put in that hard work of effort, energy, contribution, presence. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, what is necessary.
It is what is necessary, even if you are smart at working. There's no alternative to hard work.
Okay.
Even when you have all smart technologies around you.
I'm going to bank that. Thank you. That is our favorite African futurist, Dr. Rose Phillips. She joins us every second Monday. We talk about what it takes to unlock an abundance mindset and create better futures for business, for planet, for society. And of course, for number one, for you. Ultimately, it needs to benefit you. Dr. Rose started a company, Abundance at Work, as a leadership development and learning immersion company that helped business leaders solve for dignity, unlock people's abundance, and improve how the world learns. Learns, works, and loves. And you can find out more at abundanceatwork.co.za or Rose with a Z, rosephillips.com. We're going to be talking about individuals that are overlooked for multiple reasons. We're going to delve into the importance of feeling useful, seeing and valuing the overlooked. And I have no doubt there was something that sparked this little journey you are on with us, or that you're taking us on today.
Yeah, of course, there always is, Clarence. It's amazing also how much synergy there is between the conversations that happen during the morning and then the thing I talk about, and it's not even rehearsed. It's unbelievable. So what inspired this topic?
Synchronicity.
I think so. It is synchronicity. So this particular topic came from a friend of mine. So she was telling me the story of watching her retired mother, who now lives with her, incessantly polishing the brassware. And she just couldn't understand the point of why her mom could not just enjoy retirement and couldn't just enjoy the fruits of her many, many years of labor. In fact, she kept on saying, stop, 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 but it doesn't stop her mom from polishing the brassware. I think there are many people that understand what I'm talking about. And it happens to be the same day, Clarence, that I noticed our homeless people in the area here where I live, manning the robots, for those that are not South African, I'm talking about the traffic lights, during another set of our electricity power cuts from our Eskom, affecting all aspects of society. So I saw this at the same time. And it's only in our country that we would have homeless people manning our traffic lights or our robots. But both scenarios struck me as individuals who really are fighting becoming invisible to society. My friend's mom not wanting to become invisible, so, you know, if polishing the brassware is how she's useful, that's what she does. And the same with the person manning the traffic light. I mean, at the traffic light, you have no option but to look at whoever the person is that directs you, right? Otherwise, you get yourself into trouble. And for the first time in probably a long time, that homeless person is seen and is receiving any kind words from those of us who are grateful that they are just there to help the traffic flow. And yeah, for the first time in a long time, they probably are now visible when the rest of the time they've been invisible. And so here we are talking about the importance of being useful to society, about being seen, about being valued, and how social exclusion, particularly from your introductory paragraph, impacts groups like our young, our poor, our marginalized, our vulnerable, our unemployed, our homeless, and even our elders.
Yeah. I think it's probably important to start with some definitions. What is manning the robot? But maybe also what is social exclusion? And why is it particularly destructive?
Yeah, so manning the robot, you know what manning the robot is, it's directing the traffic. But social exclusion, yeah, why is it particularly destructive? It occurs when individuals are blocked from having the various rights that are given to the rest of us, whether it's rights or whether it's opportunities or resources that are normally available to members of society and which are key to social integration. And this can mean insufficient access to healthcare or to education or even civic life, right? Often affecting the vulnerable and the marginalized disproportionately from the rest of us. And it's damaging, Clarence, because it not only deprives people of their dignity and security, and you know how important dignity is for me, but it also prevents them from fully contributing to society, which in turn, of course, affects the social cohesion and the economic stability of society as a whole. And there's some research that has consistently shown that excluding people, and I'm not talking just about financial exclusion, I am talking about social exclusion, can lead to poor mental and physical health, higher mortality rates, and decreased economic productivity, and it impacts the social fabric. So it's not just a social challenge or social problem or an economic problem. It actually is a mental health problem as well.
So I guess the next question should be, how does feeling useful play into it?
Yeah. No, feeling useful is about more than just having a job. In fact, we had the gentleman from Bontierville phoned in. It is actually about being useful to society, right? Working hard versus working smart. Why are we having that conversation? And it's fundamentally about feeling valued and needed. It's about contributing and about being acknowledged for that contribution. And contribution can be anything, right? It can be volunteering, it could be care work, it could be sweeping the streets, it could be manning the robots when it isn't even your job. And when people feel useful, they experience a sense of purpose and of self-worth, which, as I said before, is critical to mental health. Those people that studied psychology, there's a gentleman called Abraham Maslow that had this hierarchy of needs, and esteem needs, which include respect and acceptance from others, are essential in his hierarchy of needs. So human beings need to feel esteem, which is not just self-esteem and self-worth, but also acceptance, belonging, and feeling like they contribute to society.
Sure. So let's talk to us about how social exclusion specifically affects vulnerable groups like the poor or the unemployed or the homeless.
Yeah, so for disadvantaged groups, Clarence, barriers to being useful often come in the form of structural inequalities, right? The homeless or the poor might be stigmatized, not just financially, but socially, and they don't have access to institutions. And because they have limited and no access to education and healthcare, they can't actually improve their personal circumstances, nor can they integrate into society. So what starts as financial exclusion becomes social exclusion. You can't get a house, you can't get married, you can't get credit, you can't have an identity. And after that comes hopelessness and despair, and after that, you are invisible.
Yeah. What about the elderly?
Yeah, so I want to talk about mom that's polishing the brass.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as life expectancies increase, more and more people will live decades of life post-retirement. I mean, it just is going, 100 is the new 60, right? But when you retire from work, that doesn't mean that you retire from life. The value of an individual doesn't diminish with age. I mean, you'd like to think that it evolves, right? Our value changes, it evolves. And yet this diminishing value concept is often exactly how society views our elders. And I don't say elderly, I say elders. And for me, this common misconception can have profound effects. Just particularly talking about studies for those that are academically inclined. Social isolation, whether it's real isolation or whether you perceive that you are being isolated, is profoundly damaging. Isolated seniors, they have, and this is the number, 29 on average, 29% higher risk of mortality than those not isolated, those that are not invisible. Yeah, so it can cut your life short, which is actually why, and this is anecdotal, I mean, I'm not going to say that there are statistical studies that show this, but you hear so often of somebody that retired and then within 2 years they're no longer alive.
Yeah.
And you wonder why.
You mentioned Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where esteem, I guess, and respect from others are vital for psychological health. In today's society, esteem or respect often correlates with wealth more than utility or contribution. What are your thoughts on this shift?
Yeah, a very insightful observation. And obviously a real concern in modern societal dynamics where it is all about how much money you have or do not have. Now, Maslow, as I talked to you earlier about this concept of esteem needs, It revolves around both self-esteem and recognition from others, which together foster feelings of accomplishment and value. However, nowadays, wealth often overshadows other contributions when it comes to assigning esteem. So when you are wealthy, that's when you get status or you get respect. Mm. But when you are making an honest, hardworking living, doing your bit for society, just because you are not wealthy necessarily in the terms of how society defines wealth and success, then that is not considered to be respected or esteemed. So yeah, I think that there is this very difficult road that we are traveling in our society today that focuses so much on money that makes more and more people feel that they are invisible.
Yeah. Okay, so this shift, is it impacting maybe our social cohesion or our individual well-being in any way?
Yeah, specifically this concept of wealth, right? When society values wealth as the primary means of success and worth, can demotivate and exclude those who contribute in non-financial ways, like house husbands, housewives, caregivers, your helper, the person that tends to your garden, volunteers, people who volunteer their time. They are essential for the social fabric. We need people to do those things. But if they're not seen to be respected because they're not wealthy, then that's not going to happen. And this dynamic degrades community ties and it increases psychological distress among those who feel undervalued. One of the biggest challenges we have in modern day society, and this is from the World Economic Forum, is the lack of social cohesion. A society breaks down because we are not a coherent society. This is when war happens, conflict happens, migration happens, diseases happen, etc., etc. It's all related. So yeah, it does have impact on social and economic and individual well-being when we don't have social cohesion.
Sure. And that applies to the janitor, the person that's cleaning the toilet. That applies to that very important function in society. But Dick's on the line. Dick, go ahead for Dr. Rose.
Good morning, Clarence. I just thought, you know, I found that her remarks about age quite interesting. But look, let me say that we are all different. And I do not have any opinions, you know, about other people's attitudes to this. But look, I like to work. I find work stimulating. I'm well past 70. I'm not going to say how old I actually am, but I certainly will not see 70 again. But look, I'm very fortunate as well that I'm physically fit and I've never suffered anything. But I work in the construction industry surveying, and I have got a strong sense that although I have hobbies that interest me, they don't quite cut it because the discipline of work and delivery to a level of performance keeps the brain active. That is my belief. But in any case, I strongly favor it, and it's sad, actually, that so many older people are going to die with their expertise. But that's what I wanted to say to you, Clarence. Thank you very much for listening.
Very important point, Dick. It's appreciated. Dr. Rose, do you wish to respond?
Oh, thank you to him for saying that. Thank you, sir. Because, yes, the biggest problem we have is not just the fact, which is already a challenge, that our elders are invisible, but that we are not benefiting from their experience, their expertise, their what they have gone through, because we don't value that. And that is probably the biggest disadvantage left for society. So we are worse off because of the way that we treat our elders, and it's completely unnecessary, because exactly as Dick said, you know, Andrew is in the 60s, in his 70s, and he feels as young as he was when he was 20 and contributing or with wanting to contribute. Just because you retire from work does not mean you retire from life.
There's some things that Dick knows that some will never get to know, but that's really quite concerning in respect to your last contribution before Dick's call. The question is, how do we rebalance these societal values towards a more inclusive appreciation of utility?
Yeah, utility, usefulness, moving away from wealth as the value statement or status being on the basis of wealth, or the fact that if you're sweeping the streets, somebody looks down on you, but somebody's got to do that job. Rebalancing, as far as I'm concerned, requires both cultural shifts and policy reforms. And, you know, cultural shifts because different societies operate differently. Not all societies do not treat people as equal. There are mostly Western societies that's very much focused on wealth. You know, I am because I dream, and so I get to where I am on my own instead of I am because you are. So culturally, I think, Clarence, we need to celebrate and recognize diverse forms of contribution. And I think actually Dick said exactly that thing. We need to celebrate and recognize diverse forms of contribution. And so this means for me valuing art, the arts, valuing volunteering, valuing care work, valuing civil service as much as we do entrepreneurial efforts and financial success. Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, they might be very successful. Elon Musk might be very successful. But the person who cleans your house and sweeps your street and look after your children, you will not do without them either. So policies can reinforce this by supporting sectors that traditionally won't accumulate wealth, like the caregiving industry, but create social value, such as social work or teaching in the arts, through whether you give them grants or subsidies and public recognition programs. So I think that there's a lot that can be done at the public level, but I think more importantly, it is really an attitude shift. It's our mindset that needs to change.
Absolutely. I got a clip from founder of Apple, Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs says there's never been any committees in Apple at all. They treated it like a startup throughout its history, and with that kind of change to corporate culture, there was a lot of innovation, and of course they remain very present today, probably because of it. So very, very interesting, the conversation.
Yes, because they remain agile. When you treat everybody as special, you get the multiplicity of ideas going forward and backwards. When you treat people as invisible, you'd have no idea what ideas they have. They could be contributing the next Apple idea, but you will never know because you don't give them space. And that's what companies like that manage to do when they treat people equally. Well, all of them are not necessarily true in that respect. But yeah, when you treat people as equal and not as invisible because of status, you actually get more innovative and more growth because now you tap into broader ideas.
Yeah, I think the implication is also that you can be well paid and invisible in a corporate structure. But yes, at least you're well paid. You got agency.
Okay. I don't know if you have agency. You might be well paid, but actually Dick said, right, being invisible is that's one of the worst things that any human being can feel, even if you are rich and invisible.
Yes.
It's not, no human being wants to feel that they are dead long before they are dead.
Okay, let's shift some gears, or maybe not. Maybe we should just go to news headlines first, and then come back and take all of this thinking into the workplace. And again, maybe just closing up on the difference between hard work and smart work. Hard work is you're going to have to mop this floor, and I'm talking about my childhood experience as a teenager working in a retail environment. You got to mop the floor, and it's probably about a kilometer long, but you're going to want to mop it so well so that you don't have to do it again soon. And that is the smart work. It's how you mop the floors, is it not?
Yes. They are, like I said, it's apples and oranges. People think it's the same thing. It is not the same thing, which is also why when people talk about AI and technology coming to take over your work, actually all the technology tries to help you do is be smarter at how you do things, think laterally. But that still does not stop the hard work from needing to be done, because that is how you learn. I always advocate that. And, you know, younger people believe that you should get to the top in 5 seconds.
Yes.
But once you get to the top, you've actually learned absolutely nothing, which means you've got no resilience and no agility. And if anything comes your way that you don't know, you fall over. And that impacts your mental health and, in fact, impacts your success in the long run. So I always believe in the power of hard work. And actually, the power of having struggled and having failed is much more powerful, because in that learning, you become resilient. So
there's that word again. Anytime. How many times have we heard it? And it wasn't planned as such. Resilient is the buzzword. Afrikaans, deursettingsvermoë. We started there. And it looks as if it's going to be tagging us all the way through to 12 o'clock. We're going to go into the workplace. We're going to find out more about applying those values there.
Cape Talk. WhatsApp Clarence.
072-567-1567.
Welcome back. Views and News through till 12. Our interaction with our favorite African futurist, Dr. Rose Phillips. And we are discussing interesting stuff, the importance of being useful with Dr. Rose Phillips. A message in, it reads as follows. I wouldn't care less if my boss didn't see me as long as they showed me the money. I can find value and acknowledgement elsewhere. I like that. That person has a fair sense of the value they bring to the party. But let's take it into the workplace then. Many companies are embracing belonging, I guess, as essential to successful workplace cultures and diversity and inclusion, particularly for those marginalized in the workplace. It is the new buzzword. Yet, counter-argument can be made that, well, belonging is necessary, it's not sufficient, suggesting it could maybe overshadow the need for performance. How do you reconcile the need for belonging with that of feeling useful in a work environment?
Yeah, you know what? It is a crucial distinction to make. In belonging, as Brené Brown, we always quote Brené Brown, and I've also spoken about it before. It's creating an environment where people can show up as their authentic selves without fear of judgment, and that's important for psychological safety. But on its own, it doesn't encompass the need for individuals to feel useful. And even for this person that dialed in and said, I don't care if my boss doesn't see me, as long as they pay me, you will care that somebody sees you, whether it's your family that sees you or whether it's your colleagues that see you. But you will do want to feel that you are actually contributing, that you are valued. And this sense of usefulness is what drives performance and engagement amongst us. Belonging is not the same as usefulness. It's two different things.
So how does belonging and usefulness interact or intersect?
Yeah, look, for me, belonging is the foundation. It's what gets people in the door. We all feel that we can be our true selves and bring our authentic experience to bear. But for long-term satisfaction and retention, we need to feel that we're contributing meaningfully, as I've been saying. And so usefulness or utility pushes beyond mere presence in the workplace.
Yeah.
And it emphasizes your impact and the recognition of what you are doing by other people. And so for me, I tend to see being valued for your contribution as a subset of belonging. I don't see them as two different things. I just see the one as a subset of the other. But unless we make that explicit, then people might just interpret belonging to be just about, you know, pizza Thursdays or muffin Mondays or sports clubs.
And it's certainly more than quid pro quo as well. But so you're saying usefulness isn't just about hitting performance targets.
No, exactly. Usefulness is about making contributions significantly, which should be recognized and valued. It's not only about meeting those targets, but also about being able to innovate, helping colleagues, helping customers, helping your community, improving processes, you're adding to the workplace culture. These are all ways in which you contribute. And for these contributions that enhance a person's sense of self-worth, and value within a company, those are the things for which you should be respected and be seen and not be invisible for. Money does a lot, but it does not do as much as people think it does for self-esteem and self-worth.
Well, you're going to get that from the family with money.
maybe they will fight for every cent you have after you're gone.
No, sure. Yeah. Usefulness is an economic term. Belonging, maybe not so. Can you suggest better words to describe the intent without necessarily converting humans into mere tools?
Yeah, no, I was thinking about this, and the word of being useful feels like you have utility, like we call human resources or labor. That's the term of being useful. But that's not really what I was meaning. I was sort of latching on to Dick's definition of feeling that he wants to contribute and maybe do hobbies is not enough. The term usefulness can give you that sense of being utilitarian, that your value is solely based on your economic output. And so to humanize this concept and capture the essence of what it actually means to be a valued member of a workplace, I think there's probably other words you could use for usefulness. So one of them is contribution, emphasizing the act of bringing something to the table, whether it's a skill or knowledge. Another one is impact, focusing on the positive change or addition that you make, which can be social, it can be creative, it could be operational. That's a new word, it's a good word. Engagement, that could be something different than being called useful. It's involving oneself fully and genuinely in activities, suggesting both quality and energy of involvement. That's engagement. And then capability. Capability is also bringing your capability to bear. That's also usefulness. Having the ability, the fitness or quality it's necessary to do or achieve a specific thing. So when we talk about usefulness of anybody in the workplace or even post-work or any other context, it's about contribution, impact, engagement, energy, presence, and capability just as much as it is about economic contribution.
Yeah, our message in everybody has a purpose in life. Mine is to serve as a bad example. As a utility of note. I'm sure you don't want to comment on that one, do you? Not exactly a good example. No.
Well, I am yet to hear anybody serve without some level of selfishness. I'm yet to.
But I love that. Everybody has a purpose in life. Mine is to serve as a bad example. Yeah, I'm going to own that. Thank you for that. Now, let's turn our attention to some solutions. If we start with our retirees, retirees bring decades of experience and knowledge. Dick brings it. That can benefit society in numerous ways. How can we shift that societal perspective to better include and value their contributions? I don't feel it is necessarily considered to the extent that it should be.
Yeah, and you know what? This is for every mother, father that is currently polishing the brassware and not being told to stop and just enjoy the fruits of your labor and feeling that is actually more off-putting than it is helpful, even though people mean well. We need to shift our perspective. We need to start by changing the narrative. And I'd say, Wilson, just start at home with polishing the brassware. If they want to polish brassware, then polish brassware. We want to start a community garden, start a community garden. And we must change our narrative in the media and community programs and in our daily conversations also, just about how we see our elders. And once again, I'm changing the language myself, right? I don't talk about elderly. I talk about elders. Because elders, for me, are people who have knowledge, experiences to impart, to give back to those that come after them. So I think that individual action is essential. Everyone can contribute by engaging with our retirees in a different way. There's, for example, a program overseas called Linkages. It's Linkages, but you spell it Linkages, right? Linking the ages, which exemplify how intergenerational collaboration can enrich both the lives of the elders and of the young. That really does prove that everyone has something valuable to offer regardless of their age, because I think our society would be worse off if we cannot benefit from the stories of those that have experienced before us.
I concur. So I guess we need all hands on deck then. We need Dick. We need the young people. We need our elders. We need our youth. And otherwise it's hopelessness and social exclusion and invisibility. Now let's talk about how we can also change the way we see and help our homeless, who are probably a growing segment of the unemployed or the elderly, given our staggering unemployment statistics, especially among our young people. The Gauteng government is going to build showers for them under bridges. Is that a solution?
Yeah. I don't think that there's one solution, to be honest, but I do think that some of our most invisible people are our homeless. And honestly, if we really just think about it, homeless people are not a different category from the rest of us. We are all 5 seconds away from being homeless, or 5 seconds away from being jobless, or 5 seconds away from living with a disability. So we could be that next person that suffers from homelessness and then hopelessness and complete invisibility. It's not a separate category that is not potentially our future. And I think that the prevailing view of the homeless tends to focus on their plight rather than their potential, right? It's often seen through the lens of their immediate needs, you know, showers under the bridges, such as shelter and food and healthcare, showers under the bridges. Or their problems, including their mental health issues. And this perspective, of course, while it's important to address the urgent human rights, it often neglects the recognition of these individuals as capable contributors to society and tends to reinforce the cycle of exclusion and invisibility. Every homeless person starts somewhere. They start, there's a story there, and before it becomes hopelessness and not just homelessness, and complete invisibility, we have an opportunity to change that narrative. And I would say just maybe four things. From invisible to visible, if we could do just that. From needs they need to they have capabilities, they can build, do gardens, they can do tours. From being marginalized and stigmatized to finding ways to integrate homeless people into society. And from isolation to community connection, being more connected. And I say this because there are young people in our, you know, 60% unemployment. How close is an unemployed young person to being a homeless person? 60% of our young people, how close are they? So when we look at our homeless as marginalized or isolated or in need or invisible, just think that that could be the next young person who's currently, as a graduate, still looking for a job, just unemployed, but seconds away from being homeless.
It is 11:47. We're chatting to our favorite African futurist, Dr. Rose Phillips, and you can find out more about her work. She's the CEO of Abundance at Work. You want to check that out, or Rose with a Z, rosephillips.com. We're talking about the importance of being useful today. If there's any comments, you're absolutely welcome via WhatsApp at 072-567-1567. Your calls on 021-446-0567. We appreciate, of course, all the little media pieces that you've sent to us that you believe would be of benefit to this conversation. Some of them are too long, unfortunately. So a little voice note or a text note will help. And we're going to see what is out there for Dr. Rose Phillips on that WhatsApp line when we come back.
Cape Talk. WhatsApp Clarence.
072-567-1567.
10 minutes from 12 o'clock. Views and News through till 12 with me, Clarence. There's a voice note in. I think let's start off with a voice note, Joe.
Clarence, I just want to say let mom polish her brass. It gives her purpose. My kids accuse me of having poor man syndrome. I've never worked for a lot of money. I worked extremely hard, and I was always very happy wherever I worked. So, yeah, it's not the money, and as soon as the kids realize that, they'll be happier in life.
I so agree with you. I mean, that's wisdom from the elders that you can't get from anywhere else, isn't it, Dr. Rose?
Amen. Let mom polish the brassware. There you go.
Somebody else writes, I enjoy being a senior despite its drawbacks, as I'm accorded respect on the whole where I go simply by virtue of my silver hair and a face etched with experience. I'm certainly not a retiree in any way from work or from engagement with society around me, including the issues being discussed. Although I need to take my age into account, being useful can be as simple as being yourself, says Sue. I'm so with you, Sue.
There you go.
So yeah, sue me.
Yeah, there's no more important thing than being useful to yourself. Start there.
Okay, but let's go to the homeless. As an individual, I think many feel helpless when it comes to an overwhelming need, nearly a bottomless pit when it comes to the homeless. Some say that the homeless just don't want to be helped. They prefer to beg on the streets. We've hear that on Cape Talk. What is your perspective on this?
Yeah, I would think that generalizations are dangerous, Clarence. And my personal view is that while not everyone should or can work directly with our homeless people or with vulnerable people, there are people who are qualified to do so, and there are people that are resourced to do so, or companies or NGOs that are resourced to do so. But each of us can play a pivotal role in preventing what I would call a social disease. And homelessness at its core is a complex issue tied deeply to economic stability of a society and to the social support systems in a society or in a community. And so with any disease, prevention is always better than cure.
There goes the doctor.
Now, if you're not, you're not the one that wants to hand out bread at the side of the road or hand out money, that's not always the way in which you can best help those that are at in the valley of despair. I think that there's a couple of things. So first, for me, teach our children how to learn, but also teach our children how to earn. I think it's important that they must learn from a very young age how to earn a living, not just how to make a living, right? And education systems that emphasize only learning, but not also how to earn, whether it's through skills development or apprenticeships or vocational training, that's the kind of educational systems we need. So that when your child gets to the point where they are jobless, they are maybe unemployed but not unemployable. Yeah. They can still find a way to make money that is legal, of course. The second thing I would say, nurturing entrepreneurship, we all talk about entrepreneurship all the time. This is the reason why, because small businesses and entrepreneurs create other jobs. They are the backbone of our economy and are primary sources of employment. I think 65% of our economy is driven by either entrepreneurs or by small business. And finally, I would say that every rand spent within our local economy is a step towards a stronger, more sustainable economic structure. So even though you might buy all of your coffee from a global brand, once in a while, stop at an artisanal shop and buy your coffee there. It makes a huge difference because it helps pay a bill, it helps grow a business, it helps create more employment for others beyond that. So though these collective efforts might seem small, right, they contribute to the safety net in society, and that might one day prevent another individual from falling into the valley of despair. You might not see the immediate effects by doing that, you know, buying from an artisanal brand or a local shop or something like that, but indirectly, our everyday choices help keep someone from losing hope and from becoming invisible.
Well, it's again been a ding-dong day, not a dairy bell day, may I add.
Not.
A light bulb day. It's just been going on and off like lasers. Dr. Rose, we're also there at that time of the day. Time for closing remarks. Do you have any words of wisdom to share with us?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm hoping people don't take away from this that it is only about retirees or only about homelessness. I really wanted people to rethink that through the lens of social exclusion and what that means. I hope that this discussion strips away that distance that we feel from the plight of our elders or from the ever-looming crisis of our unemployed youth. These aren't just distant issues affecting unknown faces, right, or strangers. Feeling and being useful in society is important. What makes us human. And plus, the future of our country depends on our integrating all of our capabilities and our potential. But as far as I'm concerned, the alternative is unimaginable. It's not just a policy failure on our behalf, but it's a societal failure when our marginalized potential is not seen. The gap between being unemployed, Clarence, between being unemployed, being homeless, being socially excluded, then hopeless, and then eventually invisible, that gap is very, very, very narrow. And I think it's best that we mind the gap, and it's best that we close the gap. So I leave you and the listeners on that note.
Yeah, mind the gap, mind the gap, mind the gap. And we thank you, as always, Dr. Rose, for this wonderful time together. Every alternate Monday, you can catch Dr. Rose Phillips, CEO of Abundance at Work. You want to go and check her out and what she does when she's not on Cape Talk. A busy woman she is. Today, the importance of being useful, and it applies as much to you and I as it does to retirees and people that are homeless. And I hope you are being appreciated in more ways than necessary. It is nearly time for news. It comes your way from Joburg at the top of the hour. So time for me to greet you. There's a message in about traffic that I want to leave you with. Traffic out of Fisher crawling through Clove Valley to Cork Bay. A loaded truck has been pulled off by a traffic cop just before entrance to Cork Bay Harbour. So one lane open, traffic on all sides affected. That's Mary's advice. Maybe it's going to come in handy.